From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Ray Benson and over 50 years of Asleep at the Wheel.
We were getting into Western Swing big time then, playing Boogie Woogie, Western Swing. You know, that's the stuff that eventually became, you know, Asleep at the Wheel's hallmark.
Support for this podcast of Texas Matters comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas music, the swing, the fiddle, the yeehaw. No other band today is able to produce that Lone Star melody better than Asleep at the Wheel.
I saw miles and miles of Texas.
The band, founded by Ray Benson in 1970, plays the western swing and early country that may only exist in a mythical long-abandoned honky-tonk's jukebox. But Asleep at the Wheel is far from being a museum piece. It continues to innovate and expand the form while keeping its roots intact. The band, through a long list of personnel changes, has become an American music success story. 8 Grammy Awards and dozens of albums later, Asleep at the Wheel is still led by Ray Benson, and Ray's origin as a country western music hero might only be explained as a glitch in the Matrix.
Oh, my life story in 2 minutes or less. Well, I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, grew up there, started Asleep at the Wheel in West Virginia, moved to California, met Willie Nelson and Doug Somm, moved to Austin, Texas in the end of 1973, and then proceeded to tour the world playing this, what then was archaic form of Western Texas music, Western swing. People say, well, how can a Jewish kid from Philadelphia become a Texas Western swing, practitioner, et cetera? And I said, well, it's like saying, how can Van Cliburn from, Louisiana and Fort Worth become this world place classical musician? Why isn't he playing honky-tonk music? Well, it's because it's what's in your heart, you know. So that's the short story.
Right, but as you write about in your book, you came from a rather musical family. You say your father was not a musician, but he loved music and loved to bang it out. The siblings grew up playing music. You picked up the guitar from your sister and started knocking out notes and played with the Philadelphia Orchestra at age 10.
Yeah, well, we sang. You know, me and my sister, we sang This Land Is Your Land, the Woody Guthrie song, and I think On Top of Old Smokey. Folk music was big popular music in 1961, and we had this little group called the 4Gs, and we sang Puff the Magic Dragon and Woody Guthrie songs, and wore very cute matching square dance outfits. So we played at barbecues, hootenannies, we didn't make any money. Our parents just thought of it as like Little League baseball.
You were exposed to so many different types of music, John Coltrane, a bossa nova. I find it interesting about that you had everything on the spectrum that you could have picked from. And, of course, you still do dabble in so many different things, but this is where this is your lane, which is Asleep at the Wheel.
Yeah. Well, I started the band with my best pal, Lucky, but he and I we would go down to both the record stores and then in South Philadelphia on South Street, the famous South Street, they had all these pawn shops, and we would buy old records, old blues records, and we just, as I tell people, it was, if you remember the early 60s, the Rolling Stones and some of the European acts were discovering American blues and roots music. Well, that's what we were doing. We just said, look at all this incredible stuff that happened from the 20s through the early 50s, and it has been ignored at this point in the early 70s, late 60s. So that was our deal, to go out and find these things. So in the course of doing it, Asleep at the Wheel has done Cajun music, has done Western swing music, done straight-ahead country music. We had top 10 country Western hit records, So I think we just, and I know, my goal was to find America and to be part of this great tapestry that's America.
Lucky, or Ruben, his given name, he came up with the name Asleep at the Wheel while in the outhouse while y'all were in Paw Paw, West Virginia.
Well, we moved into a 200-year-old log cabin that was a stage stop between Paw Paw, West Virginia, and Berkeley Springs, West Virginia. And what an experience. I mean, we had, you know, a spring house, you know.
This is all while you weren't playing music?
No, we were playing music every day. And then we found this little club in Paw Paw and got down there and played for the local hillbilly crowd and mixed up with hippies. And it was quite an amazing conglomeration of folks.
But it's interesting that you were counter to the counterculture.
Musically, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, y'all were long-haired.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And yeah. Anti-war and part of the counterculture in that way. But musically, I mean, you weren't – I mean, you would
bet.
Perform and you associated with the
with Merle Haggard, with Buck Owens. And Merle Haggard had Okie from Muskogee out, you know, and Fight Inside of Me, you know. And yeah, it was a generation gap, if you remember, and a political belief gap. And what we said was, ignore all that, folks. This is incredible music that reaches to the soul. We're going to try to bridge that gap politically. And that's what happened. And Willie was doing the same thing from the other side. He was a redneck, you know, from Texas who went, wait a minute, you know, this ain't right.
So Doug Somm, was he a kindred spirit?
Absolutely. Doug Somm, of course, in San Antonio was Little Doug Somm and played steel guitar in Western swing bands with Adolph Hoppner, with J.R. Chatwell, some of the great San Antonio folks. And, you know, we met him actually out in the Bay Area and then became real good friends and down here in Austin.
And he told you to move to Austin.
Absolutely, yeah. And so did Willie. And Willie put us on shows down at Flores Country Store, and that was our first show in South Texas.
Now, Asleep at the Wheel began to crystallize as a band, as y'all were performing around and living at very close to the edge in San Francisco. I mean, hand to mouth.
We were starving. Yeah, we were starving.
The story about the dog, I just couldn't believe.
That dog. Let's give that dog its proper. His name was Kelso, and it was one of Commander Cody's guy's dogs. He hauled this uneaten chicken dinner out of the trash and was going for it. And we said, hey, screw you, dog. We're hungry. When you're starving, you'll do anything. We would open up our guitar cases up on the University of Texas, Berkeley, up at Sproul Plaza, and busk for enough money to buy a hamburger or something.
How did y'all get from there to becoming a well-paid band?
We still ain't got there yet. What do you mean? No, it was very interesting. We started playing Tuesday nights at the Long Branch Saloon down there. This was a place where the Doobie Brothers started, and Commander Cody, Dan Hicks, and the Hot Licks. And one day, Van Morrison came down and played with us at this little club, the Long Branch, you know. And all of a sudden, he started talking about us.
To Rolling
Stone. People started taking notice, and he put us on a bunch of shows, and that was the beginning. The rest was up to us.
Right. He told Rolling Stone magazine that you were an interesting band of great musicians, and that would got you your first record contract.
Pretty much, yeah. We had all of a sudden 6 or 7 record companies came, and we wound up with the United Artists. My dear departed friend Del Shannon helped us do the demo, and then Dan Burgoyne signed us, and boom, we had a record deal. But, you know, we found out that that didn't mean a whole lot except in Austin, Texas and Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Johnny Walker sat at a table in a bar, minding his own affairs, drinking his namesake over the rocks. He was drunk, too drunk to care, when a girl in the bar walked up beside him, and this is what she said. She said, a woman came by with a letter for you. Better say, dear John, please, Johnny, please come home. I need your love and the kids, they gotta be fed. And John, if you don't hurry back, I'll be gone. Yes, that's what the letter said.
The letter that Johnny Walker read, that put you on the charts. That changed things for you.
Yeah, it's our only top 10 Billboard Country Western hit record. And it was kind of a funny deal. Me and Leroy, Commander Cody's brother, gave us the line. Said, hey, write a country western song called The Letter That Johnny Walker Read. Get it? Ha ha. We sent it to Porter Wagoner and Dolly Parton, who didn't know us or care about us, and they didn't do it. So we recorded it on a demo, and the record company, that was CBS Epic Records, dropped us, said, this song sucks, you know. So we, luckily, Capitol Records picked us up, and it was a big hit. Now, it was very interesting, because we were getting into Western Swing big time then, playing Boogie Woogie, Western Swing, you know, that's the stuff that eventually became, you know, Sleep at the Wheel's hallmark. But The Letter Johnny Walker Read is a stone-cold country western song, and so we were out on the road opening for Tammy Wynette, for Johnny Rodriguez, for Donna Fargo, Jerry Reed, you know, all of the Johnny Cash, all the big country stars. And we were playing this hybrid kind of jazz blues. And we had a 10 or 11 piece band. So we were not only going broke, but we were playing kind of, you know, all they wanted to hear was The Letter Johnny Walker Read. And then we would, you know, the typical thing was, it would be Ray Benson and Chris O'Connell would show up if we were straight country band, and there'd be a backup band. We'd do that song and Rocky Top and two hits of the day from the other people and say goodnight. But here we had this big band playing swing and jazzy, bluesy stuff, and it got a little weird.
The letter that Johnny Walker read was big, and then it faded. I didn't really hear the song, and I got, this is a terrible confession, until I was playing Grand Theft Auto.
Yep.
What was the reaction when you, I mean, it introduced the song to a whole new generation?
Not much. It was like this, they didn't really care about it. Like my son's friend said, wow, man, your dad's got a record on Grand Theft Auto. It was like, yeah, it wasn't a big check either. So, it was, you know.
So about touring with Tammy Wynette, you have a story about that. You heard a slur from the bus driver.
Big Bertha, the bus driver, Steve, yeah. Well, we were touring with Tammy, who I loved dearly, and she was so cool. So what a wonderful lady. And, you know, the bus driver was going on about, at the time, you know, they couldn't get the New York part of Columbia Records to push her records or something, although, or so they said. And the bus driver said, yeah, them dang Jews up in New York, you know, they won't push Tammy's record. I said, well, Steve, I'm Jewish. He said, oh, yeah, right, you're not. That was the end of that conversation. They just didn't believe me, and it was just kind of funny. They had a lot of Southern culture, although they're, you know, Jewish people all over, just didn't know Jewish people and assumed the stereotype. So here comes this 6'7" red-haired cowboy singer, and how could he be Jewish, you know?
Well, tell me about what that means to you when people make ignorant assumptions about you.
Well, they're not ignorant to assume it, really. You know, I mean, like I say, you know, stereotypes are there because most of the people fit them. So when you don't, it's just part of the deal. What do I feel about anti-Semitism? I think it's a sad state of affairs, and I hope that part of what I've been, you know, a little bit of what I've been able to do is to introduce folks to who had never met anybody and say, look, you know, we're all people. I don't know if it's that simple or what, but.
Oh, gather round, friends. Why hurry? Let's stay a little longer. Oh, fiddles.
You ought to see my blue-eyed Sally. She lives way down on Shinbone Alley. The number on the gate and the number on the door. Next house over is the grocery store. Stay all night, stay a little longer. Dance all night, dance a little longer. Pull off your coat and throw it in the corner. Don't see why you don't stay a little longer.
So when did the love affair with Bob Wills start?
The day I heard his record, you know, Brain Cloudy Blues, you know, when I was 17. You know. Now, I had heard lots of, I had turned on to Hank Williams when I was about 15 and went, wow, who is this guy? And of course, the guitar players and the fiddle players and stuff all have a real debt to Western Swing. And then I heard Hank Thompson. I really loved that, man. And then I heard the Brain Cloudy Blues by Bob Wills. And I was like, whoa. And then Merle Haggard put out the album in 1970. A tribute to the best damn fiddle player, Bob Wills, and that was like a graduate course.
So was it the the musicianship or what is, or the attitude or the band or just the dance component? What was it?
You got them all those exactly that, you know. I love country music for its lyricism and its simplicity and its instrumentation, fiddles, steel guitars, etc. I love fiddle music for its and I played in square dance bands that started when I was in New England, and I love fiddle music, old timey and bluegrass, and then I also loved Buddy Guy, B.B. King, Albert King, etc., and the blues and Lightnin' Hopkins and all the finger-picking blues, you know, Mississippi John Hurt. So, you know, you get all of this together and singing, and all of a sudden you go, wow, look, it's all there. So we started, the first Bob Wills tunes that Asleep at the Wheel played was Right or Wrong, which is, you know, everything. And it's the whole thing right there. The second point was improvisational music. In other words, when you play jazz, blues, swing, etc., you improvise the solos, and bluegrass too. And so that was important. As a musician, you want to play, you know, you want to be able to improvise in the great classic forms, and Western Swing does that on every song.
Lace up your boots and we'll truck on down to a knocked-out shack on the edge of town. There's an 8-beat combo that just won't quit. Keep a walking till you see a blue light lit. Fall in there and we'll see some sights. Down at the house of blue lights. There's fryers, broilers, and Detroit and barbecue ribs. But the treat of the treat is when they serve up those fine 8-beats. You'll want to spend the rest of your brights. And at the house of blue lights. We'll have a time and we'll cut some rug while we dig those tunes like we should be dug. It's a real homecoming for all those cats. Just boogie past the welcome mat. Fall in there.
So we've talked about Bob Wills, and one of his tunes was Take Me Back to Tulsa. And I know that you had an interesting gig in Louisiana once where was a KKK outfit that you turned up there, and they were talking about how they love that song.
There, no, we were. It was somewhere north south of Baton Rouge, some little town, and the radio station there in Baton Rouge said, "Hey, there's a show called the Old South Jamboree. They don't actually go out on the radio, but it's called the Old South Jamboree, and they'd love to have you." Went great, you know. This was '74 or '75. I don't remember exactly. So we pull up, and there's this big iron cross made out of drilling pipe by the hall. It's the middle of nowhere, you know. It's in the country. And we're going, I said, what's that for? I mean, I figured maybe it was a church or something.
Take me back to Tulsa. I'm too young to marry. Take me back to Tulsa.
And they said, oh, we just old drape it and burlap and soak them in gasoline and light it. That way we don't have to put up a wood one every...
White folks take the money.
It's like, holy mackerel, we're in a dang KKK hall. How do we get here? Now, listen, at that time there were 3 Jews, 2 Catholics, and 1 Creole black kid in the band. So I was going, oh, my God. And they said, we really love that Take Back Tulsa song. Well, the line is, dark man picks the cotton, white man gets the money. And this, to my mind, was very indicative of exactly how it went down there. You know, even after slavery, black people really, you know, did the hard work. And poor white people, believe me. But I think they thought, yeah, these boys are one of us. Whereas, because like Merle Haggard had changed it to poor man picks the cotton, a rich man gets the money. And both of those are accurate in terms of the 30s and 20s and 30s. But so, yeah, they thought we were along with their thing. But it was very sad to watch. This was quite a dumpy-looking crowd, you know. And we were just glad to get the hell out of there.
You were scheduled to play the White House on September 11th, 2001.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, you know, I'd been friends with the Bushes, and as I always told George and Laurie, you know, I'm a Democrat, but, you know, don't worry about that. And, you know, George and Laurie had called and asked if we play this barbecue. They had both of everybody. It was a Texas barbecue with the Perini Steakhouse, which is a wonderful place out of Buffalo Gap, Texas, that makes great steaks and stuff. And they'd have a sleep at the wheel, and it'd be a big party. And of course, you know, I was really sick too for some reason. We were sitting in a hotel, and my drummer Dave calls up and says, hey, turn on the news. I was watching Band of Brothers, which was so, it was just the juxtaposition was kind of scary. And then all of a sudden you look out and we're two blocks from the White House and we ain't going over, and the town was deserted and you know the rest. So 2 years later, Ms. Bush called back and we did play on the South Lawn. But my thoughts have always been, this was on the South Lawn of the White House at 7 o'clock that night. I do believe that that plane that went down in Pennsylvania was headed towards either the White House or the Capitol. And just one of those things. There's thousands of stories. Somebody ought to do a book, 1,000 stories of 2000, of 9/11, you know.
You said you're a Democrat. I remember I ran into you backstage at the Texas Ball during Barack Obama's first inauguration. And that was a night. They call on you to represent Texas during these big events.
Yeah, it's quite an honor. I as I tell people, I moved to Texas to become a Texan, and I mean that. That doesn't, you know, when I came, this was a Democratic state. I was good friends with Ann Richards, but I'm not an ideologue by any means.
And the music doesn't have it's not red or blue. Blues, but not blue.
Yeah. So I always said, if a president calls, we'll play for them, you know. And again, about being a Democrat, no, I don't belong to any organized political party. I'm a Democrat, you know, as Will Rogers once said. I'm proud to be a Texan, and I'm proud to work with Joe Strauss a lot, who's I appreciate quite a bit. And hope that we can all work together and try not to be so polarized and didactic, you know.
Out in the country past the city limit sign, there's a honky-tonk near the county line. The joint starts jumping every night when the sun goes down. They got whiskey, music, women and smoke. It's where all the cowboy folk go to boot scoot boogie. I got a good job, I work hard for money.
So, Ray, let's talk about the title of the band, Asleep at the Wheel. And, of course, it's catchy and invokes many things. And to me, it seems like you are giving yourself and the band over to Providence to guide where you are, where you go, or you just totally reject all responsibility for your actions.
Good. I like that. I never heard that before.
Shed responsibility, ran off to live in the backwoods of West Virginia and just to see where this would take you. But you probably are, I would bet you're the most responsible person that you know.
Well,
because I mean, how hard to keep a band going for and do all the other things that you do, all the philanthropy that you do as well?
I don't know how to answer it except to say that just wake up every day and try to put one foot in front of the other, and I have a creative mind, and it doesn't stop. So when I get up, I say, what am I going to do today? Well, first we'll take care of today, you know, and then once I've taken care of today, I want to do, what are we going to do tomorrow? And that's, I think, as simple as I can state it, you know. A lot of people say to me, co-workers, co-thing, you know, slow down. You know, I said, I can't, you know, I have ADD, you know, and utilize it to my best of my abilities. And it wasn't until I figured out that that's what it was that I understood it, you know. You know, as growing up Jewish, but also Quaker, I went to Quaker schools and Quaker camps in the summer. So I was very much infused with the, you know, responsibility of social responsibility. And I think that's wonderful. And so I relish in that and take every opportunity I can to help causes that I think need help. You know.
You've had many contacts with big record agencies, and they have done their best to drive Asleep at the Wheel into the ditch, it seems like, according to your book.
Yeah. Well, the music business, I'll quote Robert Mitchum, when after he got out of jail, He was busted for marijuana in 1950, and he did, I think, 9 months or something in jail. And they said, "Mr. Mitchum, what's jail like?" They said, "It's like show business without the riffraff, you know." On the other hand, it's an industry that's given me a lot, and it's given back a lot. But, yeah, it's got some interesting
parts. Yeah, but you write about how one record company, they immediately wanted you to forego all of the Western swing, and they wanted you to do a rock album.
Yeah, or what they called anything but what you do.
So they just wanted to take the brand of Asleep right. at the Wheel and steer yeah. it in the other direction.
Exactly. And they continued to want to do that, you know, even after you have success. It's just part of the game that they play. And I've always said, no, I love the fact that I can make a good living out of playing music, but there's a point where... And the letter Johnny Walker read was indicative of this and that. I loved it, but I wrote it for somebody else, wound up doing it, and now rarely do it because it just, you know, it's just a little bit, I just don't like doing it. So the lesson was don't sing in a song that you don't like, because if it's a hit, you'll really have to do it every night and hate it, you know.
So, right, but they don't yell at you for...
Right.
They want to hear Miles and Miles of Texas.
Yeah, and that's the good news, although every so often somebody does, because it's a wonderful song. It really is. And I'll do it and once every 3 or 4 years. I'll just say, okay, and if the girl singer in the band knows it, we'll do it. I usually make jokes up because it's got a recitation, folks. You got to understand. You know how Porter Wagoner do those, you know. So I do this recitation, you know, in the middle. Now John stared off into that streetlight, and a vision filled his poor, poor. I mean, that's pure Porter Wagoner.
It's maudlin and predictable, but you know that's what country music is sometimes.
Exactly.
You were the first band on Austin City Limits.
Well, Willie did a pilot, and PBS picked it up. My roommate at the time, Joe Gracie, was hired to book the show. And we had just had a hit on Letter Johnny Walker Red, and so our profile was real high. And they said, get Sleep at the Wheel. And who do you want on the show with you? And I said, the Texas Playboys. And Paul Bosner, who was the producer, was a New York producer, a wonderful guy, said, who are they? And I said, well, you're going to learn. So we got the Texas Playboys, which was Leon McAuliffe. All those guys were still around, really classic guys. And anyway, the show's incredible.
Let's go down the line one time.
Asleep at the Wheel has been keeping the spirit of Western swing and Texas country music alive for more than 5 decades. And while the band didn't start in the Lone Star State, they've been calling this home for the last 50 years. Ray Benson and his band have a new album full of songs about the state that they call home, Riding High in Texas, and that album drops later this summer. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes at tpr.org, and you can download us wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.